John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning. Hope everybody had a good weekend because we're starting a new week here. And I don't know, starting a week where my wife's having a birthday today. And so looking forward to that. So happy birthday, Pat. Lots of things to catch up on this busy weekend, and let's waste no time. Let's get into the five biggest stories of the day.
Number one.
Whenever you have something that's someone that throws that electric of stuff, different pitches moving all which sorts of way, second time around, third time around is always better, you know, kind of where pitches may end up, what they look like out of hand. So I think we're going to have to use that, definitely do some more studying in the video that we just had out there today for the next time around.
And we are taking you around the diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Shohei Ohtani showed him, and they pursued him, but man, did he look good. Just was able to just completely dominate, keep the Mariners off stride, really. And now the Mariners are sitting at 19-14, pretty good record, game and a half behind the Angels. But I tell you, here's the concern that I have right now. Is that I think what's been noticeable is that, okay, they played Houston, and obviously Houston's a better team. It's a team expected to win 98 to 100 games and came into Safeco and won 3 out of 4 and pretty well shut down the offense. And now the Angels, in what was a battle of a series, you know, came in and won 2 out of 3. And right now the Mariners have a 7-8 record at home. Now, again, that's because the Angels and the Astros did so well here, but they've got to turn that around. They've got to be able to win the home games because it's obviously tougher when you go on the road. Now, this team has a very good record on the road, but Angels win the series. And, and this is so important for this team because, again, this is one of the main teams they're battling for the wild card. They're going to make the wild card. The fast start for this team has been good. The fact that they have a winning record has been good. And a game on Saturday night was special in the way they were able to fight back and be able to get that victory. So, interesting series. Felix Hernandez gave up a pair of home runs early. He went 5 2/3 innings, gave up 5 runs, 7 hits, and 4 runs. His earned run average now in excess of 5. Ryan Healy, who had been on the slump, I guess you could say, with an .091 batting average in his first 7 games off the DL, he's now really doing well. I mean, he was .091 in his first 7 games. Then he went on the DL. Now he's .333, 5 homers, 11 RBIs. That's encouraging. This team can hit. And so he was also able to get the big hit and a walk-off single on Saturday night. So a new series, and the team goes on the road. Off today, they'll be in Toronto. 4:07 is going to be the start time against the Blue Jays. James Paxton's going against the Canadian team that he's always kind of liked, and a Canadian team that I guess kind of likes him. But James Paxton pitching for the Mariners. That's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number two.
We had a really, really fun camp with these guys. I thought we've really captured the right tempo and the opportunity to see a lot of stuff, maybe the best we've had. I think it helped us having the numbers of guys that we had, so the depth chart kind of worked in our favor. We didn't wear guys out too much. It was really one of the better ones we've had. And there's a lot of good things, a lot of positives, you know, a lot of guys we liked, and some of the guys that were the tryout guys, not just free agents that we signed, did some stuff too. So we got a lot of evaluations to make, and we got to make some choices here.
And so Pete Carroll pretty happy about the mini camp. A few observations. Alex Magoo looks good. I'm telling you. You caught everybody by surprise. He was the only quarterback that didn't get invited to the combine, and he looks sensational. Really, really good in the sense that he threw the ball hard. He's got a good, strong, accurate arm. I'll tell you where I thought on draft day, you take him in the 7th round, you cut him, put him on the practice squad. Well, I think he's now going to compete for a roster spot. I really do. I think he has a chance to be the backup quarterback. Now, what he has to work on, obviously, is being in the pocket. You know, he's been doing so much, his shotgun and all that stuff. But I thought he looked good. And I'm telling you, Michael Dixon is for real. This guy can really punt. And he has a very unusual, with that style, the Australian style, I mean, that ball is really hard to catch. But he can kick it as far as 60 yards. And you hear some great things from Brian Snyder talking about that. Jakeem Griffin looked like he can move. Demoria Stringfellow, you know, got the attention. It looks like he was a tryout guy. He had the troubles at UW and had to move around, but he looked good over the weekend. You know, Raheem Green and Jamarcus Jones, you know, they looked like they didn't do as great as you would expect. They were a little bit nicked up, but overall thought that was good. You know, good performance by Trey Flowers, who looks the part at 6'3", able to get near the line of scrimmage. Looks like his footwork is picking me up. So all those things are very positive right now for the Seahawks. And, of course, you'll hear from the special teams coach Brian Snyder at 11 o'clock.
Number three.
Well, Seahawks released Pro Bowl defensive end Cliff Averill on Friday with a designation of failed physical. He did play parts of five seasons in Seattle. Move frees up $7 million of cap room that could potentially go to Dwayne Brown. Kudos to Cliff Averill on a tremendous career here in Seattle.
Yeah, in fact, I think we'll be hearing something about Cliff Averill's future probably within an hour. But again, it's going to be outside of football. But no surprise that Nick has put him in a position where it looks like, you know, he's going to have to step down as a player and just could do some different things. I'm not going to spoil what's going to be his announcement. So again, wait to see how that's going to go. But what a great career coming over. He was a franchise player for the Detroit Lions at their worst. I mean, that's when, you know, they were 0-16. He fought his way through, came by, and then came for the Seahawks in a great role because both he and Michael Bennett came on as one-year guys with no egos, because even though they signed in free agency, they accepted the roles of not starting but being a pass rush guy over the that time. And of course, after a while, Averill Bennett ended up starting, becoming Pro Bowl players. 33 and a half sacks in the 4 years that he was here, 13 forced fumbles, earned a Pro Bowl in 2016 after an 11 and a half sack season. Congratulations to a great career for Cliff Averill, and stay tuned for announcements on what might be happening to him.
Number four.
So I told them when the season was over, I felt really good and was planning on coming back for, you know, 3 to 5 years, exactly what I just told you guys. So I was surprised when they took a quarterback, because I thought that maybe in the third round, you know, you can get some really good football players that can help this team now. And nothing against Mason. I think he's a great football player. I don't know him personally, but I'm sure he's a great kid. I just don't know how, you know, backing up or being the third, who knows where he's going to fall on the depth chart, but helps us win now. But, you know, that's not my decision to make. You know, that's on the coaches and the GM and owner and those kind of things.
So Coach Ben, General Manager Ben Roethlisberger, not happy about Mason Rudolph being drafted in the third round, and now it's come back for a guy that 2 years ago was talking about retirement, but nobody believing it. Now he's talking about playing 3-4 more years, and I guess that's good news for the Steeler fans, because, again, that means Ben is going to try to play maybe till he's 38, 39, 40, but not too happy that they took a quarterback, particularly one that's as talented as Mason Rudolph, a guy that some consider to be a low first, high second round pick. And so Mason Rudolph took the high road. He said, hey, if I was Ben, I'd probably say the same thing. So he was on Path at a Draft broadcast, the former Oklahoma State quarterback, and he's a competitor. But right now, Ben Roethlisberger is the quarterback.
Number five.
I don't really want to talk about Boston right now just yet. I still got a lot of work to do in this series. You know, we happen and are fortunate enough to win this series, and I can give you a lot of insight on what I feel about Boston and how they've been successful.
So it looks like it's going to be the Cavs going up against the Celtics as the business is being taken care of all the way through. And it looks like it's going to be Houston going up against Golden State. But, you know, a great performance again by LeBron. They're now up 3-1. Celtics, of course, are really just blanking the 76ers. It's now 0-3 for the 76ers, and they're doomed. So it looks like a repeat of last year's Eastern Conference Championship with Boston going against the Cavaliers. Cavaliers playing some pretty good ball. Finally, they have somebody helping out LeBron James. You know, Love was able to get 20 points and 16 rebounds in Game 3, and he was getting urged by head coach Tyronn Lue to play a little bit faster. So overall, it looks like it's going to be a pretty predictable way. I mean, the games, some have been good, most of them haven't been good, but I think you can see who's risen to the top. And again, it's going to be Golden State. They're 3-1. It looks like it's going to certainly be Houston. They're 3-1. It's 3-0 for the Boston Celtics, and right now, 3-2 right now. Everything looks good for the Cavs. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, coming up, we will try to get into a little bit of Rashard Penny, what he can be to this team. He looked good. We'll get into that under further review. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Any day at 10:15, we look under further review, and naturally, we have to take some aspect of the minicamp and look at it. And the big thing, of course, Rashard Penny. Yeah, I mean, again, Alex Magoo really did well. Looks like he's going to be fighting for a roster spot, having a good chance to maybe be able to make it. And Michael Dixon looked fantastic as a punter. But the key is the running game. That's been the focus of this offseason, and I think you can see that Rashard Penny, you didn't see him because, again, it was closed, but we were able to watch him, and he looks good. He looks natural. And what Pete Carroll brings up is that he looks as a value as a third down back. And one of the things that they did this weekend, they really got him involved in the passing game. And I know we talked to his head coach down at San Diego State the other day, and that what they brought up is, you know, how good he is as a pass catcher. And you can see it. He's natural. He runs naturally. He's very explosive. He's got speed. He's got agility. And I know that Brock and Salk were talking about it on Blue 42, which, of course, was going to be the importance and where things are getting a third down back, a three down back.
Why is it that Coach Carroll needs these running backs to be able to play all three downs? We talked about that in general. So that's the thing that they have in common between Rashard Penny and Chris Carson and C.J. Procise, etc.
Because they were horrendous a season ago at doing it. They've been horrendous the last few years at doing that. Marshawn was the last guy that could do it. That could pass block, that could catch, that could run on early downs. And you become so predictable that when this guy's in the game and Eddie Lacy, guess what he's going to do? He can't catch. So he's going to try to just run this play here. And then, you know, McKissick comes in the game, and guess what he's going to do? He's going to catch. Do you remember the number Trevon Boykin talked to us about last year? It was 115. It's either 115 or 125. That was the target receptions for the running backs. They got 79. And the only reason they had 79 was McKissick as a receiver had 37 of those. You could probably pare that down to 50. They fell so short in that area. Yeah, and Rashard Penny's ability to catch stood out to Coach Carroll.
And that's the big thing that I think that you can notice is that he can catch the ball. So can Chris Carson. So can C.J. Procise. And so can J.D. McKissick. So that 115 number, you know, needs to be at least addressed. And I think that you can see that. And I know it's funny. Pro Football Focus did their review, and they thought that Penny can gain like 923 yards and catch about 36 passes and be a big part. And, you know, I think you'll see that there's still going to be, you know, a sharing of the position. I think Chris Carson still goes into camp, you know, at least as the leader of the pack, and then Penny's going to be catching up. But his ability to do three downs, I think, is important. And really, if you think about it league-wide, there is a trend that's going on because college is changing. You know, before, back two decades ago, I mean, they were running wishbone and doing all the running and that. Well, now, I mean, it's such a passing thing going on in college, you know, particularly with the spread offense and the air raid offense, that now running backs, yeah, you run and you get a lot of carries, but you also get to catch the ball. And what you see in Penny is that he has the ability to do and check off all the things. We talked to Bucky Brooks from the NFL Network, and he discussed in NFL.com what the league is trending to as far as three down backs.
What I think you're seeing now is the renaissance of the position. People are really, really valuing the running back. The difference is the running backs now that are the most impactful are not only guys that can run the ball, but they can make plays in the passing game. You're seeing kind of the coming together of all these guys that play high school 7-on-7 ball, continue to go into these spread offenses where they throw the ball all over the yard in college, to now coming into the pros with a real, real good sense of how to get open, how to be a contributing player in the passing game. Because that they're invaluable, because now you can keep those guys on the field all three downs, or you can do like the Patriots and some of the other teams. You can rotate guys in and put them in a situation to maximize their strong parts of their game.
And so on paper, and what you see is that this team now has the capability of having, you know, talented guys that can play the position. Now, of course, one thing that has to be done if you're going to be a three-down back, you have to be able to block. And that's something that your Penny's going to be working on. Now, again, it's something that we're not going to see in a mini camp, mainly because, you know, you just, that's just not there. It's just not part of the equation because you can't really do any blocking. You can't make any contact. And so that you really can't do. But I think, you know, and I know one thing over the last couple of years, particularly, it's hard to judge the running backs. I mean, for example, everybody was talking about Thomas Rawls. I know Pete Carroll was, but through the OTAs, the rookie mini camp, and even the regular mini camp, you can't really notice the running backs because, again, they don't really play such a prominent role. Yeah, they catch the ball, but they're running against air for the most part. There's no tackling, so you see more of that at training camp. But what you were able to see, at least over the weekend, is how valuable Penny can be to the passing offense and the running offense. I mean, I can see where they just had to be. I mean, this guy can be good. I really like what I see of him because, again, he just is so smooth. It's so natural. I mean, there's nothing that's forced. I mean, he runs naturally. He's quick. Again, he was the third fastest guy at the combine and at running back, and that, I think, shows the speed that's necessary, and he's big. I mean, he's 222 pounds right now, and the expectation is he'll get up to 230. And so you have him. Pro size is at 230. You know, Pro size, I think, is the one that's really going to have to show something at camp and be healthy if he wants to make this team. Because, you know, J.D. McKissic is, and Pro size, you know, because of their experience at wide receiver at college and even in the pros, at least for McKissic, you know, they are so valuable. That's why you kind of wonder, is McKissic, because, you know, you can keep him maybe as an extra wide receiver slash running back because he can go into either room, and that could put Procise in trouble. Maybe there's trade value for Procise, but Procise is a talent. He's a guy that could do some things, but you're not going to be able to do it if you're going to be in the training room all the time, and that's been his problem. He's always been hurt, and that has held him back. So if he can get those things going right, then I think they can be encouraged by some of the positive things that go. But I think right now, Penny looks as built. He looks very, very good. And I think that he could be a value. But again, the value of the third down back or in three down type of backs is, again, you know, you have continuity. Let's say you're going no huddle and you want to try to, you know, just not make too many substitutions. But clearly, the one thing that, you know, Bucky Brooks is talking about, the evolution of the position, still the evolution of the position is not to have the back get more than 20 carries a game. Those 320-pound backs are rare. And then last year, you only saw nine backs getting 1,000-yard seasons. One of those is cut already and doesn't have a job in C.J. Anderson of the Denver Broncos, who let him go. So if they can get Penny to get 700, 800 yards, if they can start to get the numbers right, this running game can go. But don't count out Chris Carson. Chris Carson is still a valuable guy on this team, and he's going to give Penny a fight. But, boy, when you watch Penny run, he is so smooth. It's very electric to see it. Again, it's such a natural type of way that he does it, and you can see he's also going to be very difficult to tackle. Looks like he's also very good at, you know, possessing the ball, making sure that he doesn't fumble. I mean, that seems to be very positive. But I think the reviews right now are encouraging about the running game. And, of course, one of the things that's going to be a part of this is going to be Mike Solari, because I think you can see there is a more physical style to what they're doing as far as blocking, particularly on running plays. I mean, you know, pulling guards and trying to, you know, get those power guys moving, you know, not as much finesse, a little bit more just power, and this line's going to be bigger. And so, you know, if the running backs cooperate, which they should, because, again, the talent is there. You know, Penny has talent. Carson has talent. You know, Procise has talent. And so it's going to be very competitive. But so far, so good on Rashard Penny, because I think that overall they have been more than pleased with what they saw. And, again, they scouted him. They made sure that, you know, they didn't tip off that he was the guy that they were looking for. Everybody thought that maybe they're going for Darius Geis from LSU. maybe even trading down. But again, they had the temptation to trade down, and once they almost did it, they pulled back at the last minute, and I think they made a wise move. Because Penny, again, first-round pick, maybe that's a lot to pay for a running back, but still, they needed something, and they needed something good, and he looks like he could be very good for this running offense, and again, have the opportunity and maybe be a three-down type of player. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, we're going to talk to Larry Stone. We were going to talk to him at 10:30. He's stuck in traffic. So what we're going to do is talk to him at 10:45. We're going to go behind the lines at 10:30 and talk about what's going on in the National Football League. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
I'll tell you what, this offseason in the NFL, of course, we're going behind the lines, has really moved so quickly because now we are already, you know, 1 week of mini-camps, rookie mini-camps into the offseason. Teams are now into phase two and can start going on the practice field here pretty soon. OTAs are going to be beginning, and so the season is really going quickly. You know, 9 teams held their mini-camps, rookie mini-camps, including the Seahawks, which, of course, you know, naturally everybody's going to be saying nothing but good things because all you're seeing is you know, the guys on the field, and it's welcome because it's the first time you've seen guys on the field this offseason. But I thought it's interesting also the fast pace of how guys are signing. I mean, Seahawks are getting 3 of their draft choices done. Minnesota has signed, I think it's eight of their top 9. They're all done. And you can also look at most of the other teams. I mean, you know, I know San Francisco, they've popped off about 3 or 4. So the draft choices are getting signed real quickly. And, you know, see, which, and it's also kind of an interesting time, too, because, you know, some deadlines have now been reached. Deadlines in the sense that, you know, for example, tomorrow is the last day for unrestricted free agency. Anybody signed after May 8th, now it's just a street free agent, and so that cuts down the number of guys that you know, are going to count as far as compensatory picks. And Seattle naturally are not going to get any compensatory picks. And that's because they signed 8 and they lost 6, and so with that net not having the net gain, they don't get the 4th round pick for Jimmy Graham or the 4th round pick for Sheldon Richardson and the 4th round pick for Fall Richardson, but that's all off the boards right now. Interesting, 168 players have signed in unrestricted free agency moving to different teams, and of that equals a total amount, which was last year, 168. So, and it was interesting, also looking at the numbers, that's a little bit down as far as what the numbers are for those signings. I mean, a little bit less as far as the money going to players, and that's a little surprise. Of course, I guess maybe it's not, because, again, there was a big deal for Kirk Cousins and a big deal for Case Keenum, but still a lot of minimum salary deals. Still, there's a lot of good players out there, because you take 168, and there's about 91 that have re-signed with their teams, and so you still have a pool of about 140 players that are still available, but now they're going to be counted as street free agents and guys that we'll see how quickly, you know, they go. But naturally, as camp goes on and injuries start to mount up, you know, there's going to be more signings. And, you know,
Professor,
guys,
who's out there that you're surprised is still available?
The safeties. I mean, you know, Eric Reed, and of course we saw that Eric Reed filed suit with the Players Association, a grievance, you know, collusion, you know, kind of like Colin Kaepernick, thinking that everybody's holding this against him, that he had this not standing for the national anthem, and that's been one of the reasons. But, you know, what's Kenny Vaccaro, a former first-round pick of the Saints, saying? What's Trey Boston, for a guy that had been in Carolina and with the Chargers? You know, he's still out there. So I think that's a big surprise, you know, and look at last year's Seattle draft class. I mean, the guys that they thought were the cherished two, Luke Jokel, he doesn't have a job. Eddie Lacy doesn't have a job. Our good buddy Michael Wilhoit doesn't have a job right now. So that free agent class that Seattle brought in, you know, they brought in 7. You know, they were able to get Bradley McDougal on the roster, and, you know, but you know, still nothing for Eddie Lacy, and nothing right now for Wilhoit, and nothing for Luke Jokel. And you would think there was going to be something there for Luke Jokel. local, something, but that's been a little bit of a surprise. But yeah, it's been, you know, a fast and furious market, kind of fun to see all the movement and all the things going on there. But overall, it's been a good free agency period. We'll get a chance maybe to review it once we get past maybe Wednesday or so to look back at it, because, you know, Oakland's been very active. I mean, they got about 12 new guys, and Seattle, of course, with the 8 that they brought in. A little surprised that Indianapolis hasn't been more aggressive, because I thought maybe, you know, they would be, you know, more on things, because again, they have so much talent to catch up on, but they wanted
like
to
like they had 1,000 picks in the draft, though.
Yeah, they did. They did. But still, I mean, you have a team, I think Oakland even had like 12. Green Bay, I think, had about 12.
Yeah.
So they weren't like the league leaders as far as, you know, having the number of picks. But yeah, Oakland's, I don't know. That's a strange offseason. Really strange, because they've taken chances on players that you didn't expect. I mean, they've been aggressive in free agency, aggressive in the draft, but, you know, they've taken a few chances. And I guess the one scary part is that their roster now has 14 players that are in their 30s. 14. That's a lot. And so you kind of wonder, it's like, okay, John Gruden is trying to go with as many veterans as he can. He's not a guy that likes working a lot with young players. He likes working more with the veterans. We'll see how that works. But, yeah, kind of fun to see where that team's going to be. Are they going to be better? You'd have to think they're going to be better because, again, they're going to have better offensive coaching. They didn't have that last year, so I think that will help. But also, Raiders are in a very tough division, I thought that was pretty good. But, yeah, free agency period coming to a sad ending tomorrow. That's, again, players are going to continue to sign. There's always going to be activity. There's always going to be things going on. But that part of it starts to move on, and now you start to really get the look of the teams and how they start to put things together with the OTAs. You know, once there's now still going to be 23 teams, I guess, coming up this weekend with either their rookie minicamp. You know, going back to free agency, you know the one team that didn't sign a free agent?
Who is that?
Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah.
They're the only team that didn't get an unrestricted free agent. You know, they've been certainly extremely active in trying
lots
to get
trades.
Guys. Yeah, yeah, but not on the trade front. I mean, they made the trades, and they've made that defense so much better, but they haven't done a lot to really get going as far as free agency. And again, they're going to get compensatory picks next year. They get, but they also didn't have a first and second round pick because they made two trades involving wide receivers that took those away.
Yeah, that's very true. I forgot that Tavon Austin actually moved during the draft when it looked like they were actually going to keep him. What about Dez Bryant? Do you think he's asking too much monetarily, or are teams just not interested in general?
I think right now teams, for surprising reasons, just aren't interested. I think they probably fear what he might want to be getting, because, you know, I think that somebody was saying that he wants a 3-year deal at $28 million. If somebody was talking to him about a 3-year deal at $28 million and he didn't like that. And so Beck Baltimore, I think, was that team. And so they moved on and went a different direction. But, an $8 million is pretty fair, because he's now a number two receiver. I guess his thought is he'd rather do the 1-year deal and then hope to be able to come back and hit it again and get bigger money next year. But nobody's really making a move on him. So how long that's going to go? I mean, he's too talented to be just sitting out and not getting anything. So you have to figure he's going to go. But yeah, he's clearly one of the best players on the market. And, you know, you still have the Colin Kaepernick discussion. But I think everybody pretty well understands that that's really not going to happen. I mean, it's so remote now that he's going to be able to get anything, suing the league, and he's kind of out of sight, out of mind. So it looks like he may be out another year, which, again, you hope he gets a job. You hope things can go well, but it still doesn't look good.
Yeah, John, I saw something interesting this morning. It was a question about what will Eli and the Giants need to do over the next couple of years to make it worth them not taking Sam Darnold this year.
I think, well, certainly if Daquan Barkley can run and do the things that you saw that was happening with Leonard Fournette in Jacksonville, I think that, you know, you get a top five running game, and that could be the case with Barkley, then all of a sudden I think the fortunes of the team really go well. So I think that's the one thing that I think that they're hoping on. And I think what they're hoping is that if you get 3 good years from Barkley, that can pretty well justify, okay, we got 3-4 more years of Eli Manning. And if you can have the good play, because you still, I still go back and look at what Terrell Davis did at the end of the career for John Elway. I mean, he was really able to make things so much better for Elway. And he had, again, with that one stretch, like 6,400 yards over a four-year period, and then, you know, ran like an MVP, that just helped everything. And so if he can get that, I think it just makes it easier for Eli and justifies not taking a quarterback. But, boy, are they going to look bad, particularly with Sam Darnold being in the same area, being over at the same stadium, because I think Darnold's going to be the prize of this draft class. I really like what he can do, and I think that he's going to be better than any of the other quarterbacks. And if that's the case, I think he can have a great career in New York and then make New York not feel too good about passing him up, the Giants. But I like him. But again, that's going to be fun to watch the quarterbacks as how they evolve, because again, it was such an interesting draft. I mean, the quarterbacks really moved the ratings, moved everything up, got all the excitement in the draft. I mean, ratings were just incredible overall. So like what you're seeing there. But overall, I think that the Giants did pretty well. I think that they get Barkley. They get they still have their quarterback that they like. And you kind of knew that they weren't going to make the move and get Darnold, but they could look bad for not doing it. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, it's Larry Stone of the Seattle Times. We'll chat about the Mariners, Ohtani, what's going on with the team. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And trying to catch up with Larry Stone of the Seattle Times. And, of course, a big series for the Mariners. They lose 2 out of 3 to the Los Angeles Angels. And, of course, Shohei Ohtani was just absolutely dominating and showing why he was so valued by so many teams and how, you know, they tried to invest everything in trying to get him. I mean, they made so many trades, Jerry DePoto did, to try to be in position with the international money to be able to do it. They had more international money than the Angels, but nevertheless, the Angels got him, and you can see how good he can be. And I guess he's the, one of the difference makers on that team that has them atop the division and battling and staying ahead. Good three-way race right now with the Astros, the Angels, and the Mariners. And the Mariners, of course, with a 19-14 record. But you kind of wonder, it's like, okay, what difference would have made had Ohtani been added to this roster as opposed to going down and being with her? And joining us right now is Larry Stone of the Seattle Times. And so, Larry, I mean, what the impact of Ohtani right now with the Angels, is that the thing that kind of puts them a little bit over the top?
Yeah, that and the fact that Mike Trout is better than any other player in baseball. Just, you know, you keep thinking Trout can't get any better, and yet he does. But, yeah, Ohtani is kind of the separator. I mean, you added one fell swoop, you added an impact bat and a dominating pitcher. And not only that, it barely affected your payroll. So, it was a huge addition for the Angels. And, you know, they added a couple other pieces, Kinsler and Upton. They got a pretty decent squad. So, this was a big series. As big as, you know, series in May aren't that huge, but when it comes down to it, I think the Mariners are going to be fighting the Angels for the second wild card spot.
Yeah, I was looking at FanGraphs right when the series started, and it projected the Mariners to win 84 and the Angels to win 87. And I guess the scary part for the Mariners is the fact that, okay, as good as the season has been, as good as the start's been, you know, they've had trouble against these two teams, the Astros and the Angels at home, you know, losing 3 out of 4 to the Astros and then losing 2 out of 3 to the Angels, where you really need to do well at home. That just hasn't been the case against those two teams, and that makes it tougher because now you have to go to their place to try to win games.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those are the only two series they've lost all year, but they're to the two teams ahead of them in the standings in their division, and now they're going to Toronto, another team that's right on their heels right now, game behind. I think another team that should be in the race. I mean, you look at the standings, and you have to concede the first wild card spot to whoever doesn't win the AL East. The Yankees and the Red Sox are both playing 700 ball. They're on well over 100 win pace. So you got to figure one of those is going to be the first wild card. And you figure that I think when the Astros will separate themselves. They're struggling a little bit right now, and they've actually been passed by the Angels, but I think most people can see that they're going to win the division. So you really are fighting for that second wild card, and it's the Angels and the Blue Jays the way it looks now, unless there's a surprise team that emerges. So, I mean, it's pretty evident that the games that you have to win, you have to clean up against the really bad teams, and there's a lot of them, and you got to hold your own against the teams that you're fighting, like the Blue Jays and the Angels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what else looks good about the Angels? And we'll review the Ohtani thing, but I mean, because they've had, you know, the fact that they can be in first place and fight all the injuries on their pitching staff.
Yeah, they don't have a great bullpen. That could be their undoing. But, you know, what you have in May is not necessarily what you're going to have down the stretch, because there's so many teams, John, right now that are just so far out of it. I think there's going to be, in past years, a lot of teams could cling to the hope that they were in the wild card race and really not be in the trade market, you know, dumping their veterans and stuff. But now you look at 8, 9, 10 teams in baseball who are clearly, even in May, are so far out of it that there's going to be, I think, more players available. There's going to be a lot of maneuvering with the contenders kind of raiding the non-contenders, and maybe even a little earlier than July this time, rather than waiting until the trade deadline. I think there's going to be earlier trading. So, the Angels could fortify their bullpen. But their starting rotation is, you know, Garrett Richards is back and looking good. Skaggs looks pretty good, and Ohtani. And their lineup is pretty good as well. I think the Mariners have a better lineup. I think they have a better bullpen. But, you know, Trout is a separator. He's just so good that he wins games by himself a lot of times. And, the Mariners' rotation so far there's been some good signs, but there's also been some struggles and some concerning signs as well.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you go over and kind of revisit how that bidding went for Ohtani? Because, I mean, the number of trades that Jerry Dipoto make to get the international money, and having more international money to offer than the Angels, kind of revisit how that all kind of separated and got done.
Well, I mean, Ohtani narrowed it down to 7 teams, most of which were on the West Coast, and he had a couple of days where he kind of went to a hotel and invited each team in to give their presentation. And, the Mariners have made up a PowerPoint and all sorts of things, extolling their virtues. And, you know, he'd asked for a presentation for each team, and they put a lot of effort into making a really good presentation, and they had their time. And he ended up picking the Angels. And as he said, the Mariners had also done what they could to throw him as much money as they could, because you're limited to a maximum amount of money you could offer because of the rules. And so it wasn't really a money thing. A lot of people think that he wanted to play for the Angels all along, and it was kind of a charade. I don't know about that, but the Mariners had a lot of positives to offer him, including the fact that they've been a successful team for a lot of Japanese players who have come over, and including Ichiro and Sasaki and Jojima and whatnot. But in the end, he spurned them and chose the Angels, and it was a huge blow to the Mariners, because I think a lot of their off-season plans were predicated on the hopes of getting him and what he would mean to the rotation and to the lineup. It would have been interesting if he had played DH. He would have had to put Cruz in the field, and I don't know how that would have worked, considering how hard it is for Cruz to move around. Or they could have played Ohtani, and, you know, the Angels have not put him in the outfield yet, but he could play in the outfield. There's a little more risk of injury there, but I think in the end the Mariners probably would have had to put him in the outfield, but it's all a moot point now.
How much of a boost do you think he would make to the Mariner team had he made it here?
Well, after seeing him, I mean, he's huge. I mean, he is a dominating frontline pitcher, and he is a impact bat. I mean, he's slugging over 600, which is, you know, the elites are over 500. So, you know, I think at some point the Angels have been really careful with playing him. I'd like to see, if I were an Angels fan, I'd like to see him play in the field a little bit more. I think they're babying him a little bit too much, and maybe that will change as the season goes along. But he's, I think he should be in there almost every day, except maybe the day before he pitches.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the Mariners already have a dynamic lineup, and if you add him to it, it would have been even that much better, and they sure could use a pitcher like that in their rotation. So he would have been a huge boost for them. And the beauty of him is that he's being paid the major league minimum, essentially. So you wouldn't have had to blow up your payroll, which is usually the case when you're going after a player of his caliber. But that was what was so unique about him. He's coming in essentially like a major league rookie, making a rookie salary, not eligible for arbitration for, you know, 3 years, and free agency for 6 years. So you're getting a huge bargain with an established star player that you're getting at a rookie's price.
Pretty amazing. It really is. How would he be right now, I think, considered a number one caliber starter?
He sure looks like it to me. I mean, he's only pitching once a week, so you're not riding him like a, you know, like a workhorse Verlander type. You know, who's out there every 5 days, or Max Scherzer or whatever. I don't know if he's going to grow into that. I mean, they're doing it the way they did it. They do it in Japan, where you pitch essentially once a week, and they're staying with that. So he's not going to have as many starts as you'd want from your number one starter. But as far as caliber of stuff, I think he has the potential to be that. I mean, his ERA is four, you know, over four. So he's had this. He's been hit a little bit. A lot of that was in one game, you know, when I think he had a blister or something. So he's been dominant in a couple of games. And, you know, the Mariners did touch him for a home run when he tired a little bit in the seventh. But I think as he gets more comfortable with being over here and the newness of the situation, I mean, just from what I've seen watching him on TV and then watching him in person, I think he definitely has number one starter stuff.
Mm-hmm. No question. So it's an interesting series. Now they go on the road for seven. Toronto is going to be a tough one. And of course, kind of fun to see where this season's going to go, but at least they're competitive and at least they're in it. Hey, Larry Stone, thanks for joining us in the Venue Kings Hotline.
Anytime, John.
Read Larry Stone on the Seattle Times. And, of course, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will go ahead and listen to Brian Snyder talking about what's there for Michael Dixon, what's there for some of the special teams players, and what's there with Sebastian Janikowski. That's coming up next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.